expressed by the Holy Ahl al-Bayt. But what does it mean when the Prophet of Islam says, ذِكْرُ عَلِيٍّ عِبَادَةً, the mentioning of Ali is worship? What does this mean? It means that Ali ibn Abi Talib is the champion of Tawheed. It refers to the idea that through Ali ibn Abi Talib, we can get proximity to Allah. We can understand what Tawheed in reality is. We can appreciate the worship of the Almighty subhanahu wa ta'ala. Why you ask me? I tell you, Amir al-Mu'mineen was born in the house of God. He was martyred in the house of God. And in between, his life was dedicated to Tawheed. We believe when you and I state Ya Ali, it is what? One of its applications is what? Is tawassul. We are seeking nearness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through the commander of the faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and welcome to the latest edition of Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. Every year in the month of May, we remember the Nakba, or catastrophe, when in 1948, Zionists forced 750,000 Palestinians from their homes at the point of a gun. Of course, the Nakba didn't start in 1948. Palestinians were being displaced for decades before that. Furthermore, since the 1930s, Palestinian civilians have faced terror attacks by armed Zionist gangs. And the Nakba didn't end in 1948 either. Later in the show, we'll be looking at how Zionist forces are trying to censor and distort textbooks for school children in the hope that they'll never properly understand the Palestinian struggle. As always, I'll be speaking to experts on this issue to find out more. But first, we've got this special report by Bianca Rahimi.
The 15th of May is a date etched in infamy, Nakba Day, the commemoration of the expulsion by Zionist terror of approximately 750,000 Palestinians. About 530 villages were ethnically cleansed and either destroyed or given new Hebrew names so that they could be colonized by Jews. For Palestinians, the Nakba is a continuing process still happening, indeed intensifying today. It is well known that the colonial power Britain was responsible for allowing the establishment of a settler colony in historic Palestine. Less well known is that recruits for the Zionist terror militias to take part in the Nakba came from Britain and other Western countries. In Britain, the Jewish agency set up a secret recruitment centre in a London branch of the retail chain Marks & Spencer. After health checks, recruits joined the Haganah, or the elite Palmach, or strike force, both of which committed many atrocities against civilians, including castration. One of the youngest recruits from Britain was the internationally known hairdresser Vidal Sassoon, seen here in Palestine in 1948. The far-right terror militias like the Stern Gang and the Ergun were also active in Britain and dispatched perhaps 40 British recruits to the terror in Palestine. The Ergun recruited via a mass poster campaign under the cover name of the Jewish Legion, led by Major Samuel Weiser, the deeply racist public face of the group. All of the group's committed atrocities, including massacres of civilians. The atrocities have been covered up ever since by intimidations, ideology, and lies. Alternatively, the past has simply been erased by the destruction of Palestinian villages and their replacement with forests created by the Zionist Jewish National Fund. One even has the Orwellian title of Peace Forest and has been expanded in recent years via the demolition of Palestinian homes in Silwan, East Al-Quds. Shockingly, some are named after the countries from which funding for the ethnic cleansing has come, such as the British Park or the Canada Park. There are dozens of charities in the UK, US and Canada raising money to further the ongoing ethnic cleansing being committed by the settler movement with the support of the military and government. For example, the British Friends of Ariel University raises funds for a university built entirely on an illegal settlement. According to the UN, settlement construction is a war crime. A director of the charity, Benjamin Pearl, lives in Hendon, London. He currently faces no pressure to withdraw from his collaboration with war crimes. Here he is, pictured with four Conservative MPs. The history calls for a response in Palestine and elsewhere to shut down and dismantle the institutions responsible for the ongoing Nakba.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and former professor at Bristol University and a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. He's also a co-founder and co-director of the lobbying watchdog initiative Spinwatch. We're also joined by Dr. Garda Carmi. Dr. Carmi was born in Jerusalem, but her family was forced out of their home by Zionist colonists in 1948 when she was still a baby. The family moved to England in 1949, where she grew up and was educated. She practiced as a medical doctor for many years and has held a number of research appointments on Middle Eastern politics and culture. And she's a former research fellow at the Institute of Arab and Islamic Studies at the University of Exeter. Welcome to the show. Garda, I wonder if I could start with you. I mean, you've lived through that, and perhaps you could just give us the benefit of your reflections after all this time and all that suffering and the fact that people are still resisting.
Well, yes, of course, it's May the 15th. Will be the anniversary of the establishment of the State of Israel. Indeed, we were victims of that establishment. And I tell you, we were luckier than most because we got away to Damascus, where my grandparents lived. Many people didn't have that, and they became refugees instantly, and eventually the UN got them into refugee camps, which are still standing today. Now, in our own case, the shock and the trauma of that departure remained with my parents all their lives, I think. It was one of the reasons why they never talked about the time in Palestine. We didn't grow up with stories of, you know, when we did this and when we did that. They didn't want to talk about it. No. And it's a terribly sad that in the end they wouldn't go. They wouldn't go, although I remember arguing that our country is still there. It's occupied by other people, but it's still there. They couldn't bear it. The idea that strangers were walking those streets pretending that they were natives was beyond them.
No, indeed.
So it's been really difficult. It's a terribly sad, tragic event which has not been sufficiently understood, not only by people outside, but by Palestinians themselves. Mm-hmm. Because I think the trauma was so profound, it's taken decades to try and come to terms with it.
Well, we'll come to how the history has been concealed a little later in the programme. But David, I mean, people from Britain, British people, went over to participate in the ethnic cleansing, didn't they, back then?
Yes, it's amazing. I mean, this is something which has been buried from history. You can read it if you read in detail all the historical accounts of the period. Marks and Spencer's had a secret recruitment centre for the Haganah to recruit militias to go and expel the Palestinians. And indeed, there was an anti-fascist group in London, the 43 group, which went over altogether to the Irgun, the far-right revisionist Zionist terror group, and they sent about 40 people to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians. People don't know that. These were British Jews who went to shoot and to kill and to expel the Palestinians. And a truly shameful part of British history, which people have forgotten.
No, indeed. And as we've just heard there, I mean, you know, people go in, many people from this country, many people from London went there, and indeed came back. Do you know whether, came back here, you know, obviously after they'd participated in this ethnic cleansing, I mean, do you know whether any of them faced any sanctions for that? And indeed, have you ever come face to face with any of those people that participated in the Nakba?
No, they never came. They were never the object of sanctions at all. And that, of course, has been the story of Israel. Total impunity. Nobody ever holds Israel accountable and its supporters accountable for the tragedy of Palestine. No, indeed, they were never made accountable. Fortunately, I didn't come across any of those people, but I tell you, what I came across was 1967, when Israel invaded and occupied the rest of historic Palestine. The number of Jews in this country, British Jews, who were prepared to go out to that area and fight on the side of Israel was phenomenal. And I well remember a grocer in Golders Green, where ironically enough my family lived, and I remember saying to him, why are you, he says, my shop will be closed because I'm off to Israel to help out. So I said, why are you doing that? He said, because we are under attack. Mm. And I was so struck by that. We? Who's we? Mm. This man was English, was a British person, as far as I knew.
Yes.
That was the kind of thing that went on.
No, indeed. And I just wanted to maybe ask you, David, I mean, Vidal Sassoon passed away 10 years ago, actually, commemorated his anniversary of his death, I think, was commemorated recently by a prominent member of the Jewish Socialist Group. I just wondered what your thoughts were on what that says about how the Nakba is actually remembered in this country.
Yeah, and this was a guy called David Rosenberg. Yeah. He's a supporter of Palestinian rights. But he remembered the death of Vidal Sassoon for his involvement in the 43 group, an alleged anti-fascist group from the 1940s. Now, what's extraordinary about that is that Sassoon, as we saw in the film there, travelled to Palestine. He was in the Palmach, the elite strike force of the Haganah, and he said that was the making of his life. He would, participating in the ethnic cleansing of Palestine was an experience which stayed with him for the rest of his life. Now, what on earth are socialists, Jewish or otherwise, doing celebrating someone who participated in ethnic cleansing? This is a truly extraordinary thing. It says a lot about the way in which even pro-Palestinian people have a blind spot on the role of Zionism in our history.
Yes. Turning, if I can, Garda, to you about the ongoing Nakba. I mean, we see the regular incursions at the Al-Aqsa, the demolitions, the brutality, the murders, the killings that are carried out on a routine basis. I mean, what do you think that says about the current situation?
Well, first of all, remember that the war against the Palestinian people that Israel waged started in 1948 and before, and it was the aim of it was erasure. This is important for people to understand. The aim of the Zionists was to erase the fact that there had ever been anything called Palestine, or a native population called Palestinians, who had their own culture, their own customs, their own society. There was a ferocious attack on the history and the culture of the Palestinian people. And that started from, as I say, 1948 and before. Now, that's continued. So it's an ongoing process under which Israel has felt able to expel more Palestinians, take the case in Jerusalem's Sheikh Jarrah area, where people are fighting to stay in their homes, even now and losing, almost losing the battle. So it's an ongoing attack. And as for killings, just a few days ago, the Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Aqla, who is a marvelous woman who had been doing her job when the Israelis shot her and killed her in the Jenin area. You know, this is a very, very big enemy to fight, really. And when you earlier asked me how come the Palestinians are still standing on their feet, that is in itself truly remarkable.
It is.
Because this enemy is multi-headed. It's like a hydra. It's not just what we see in the shape of the Israeli army, but it's also the extended pro-Israel lobbies, the Jewish supporters of Palestine, even socialist Jews, as we've just heard, cannot, supporters of Israel, I meant to say, cannot stop themselves from being sympathetic
and
to Israel.
And, you know, and further to that, David, I mean, we've got charities, haven't we, you know, supporting, I mean, for example, Oriel University, you know, based on a legal settlement, supported by a charity, a British charity. I don't know, is that widespread? I mean, and, you know, how is this happening? I mean, British charity supporting what effectively are kind of war crimes.
It's not one charity. There is one charity which supports the university. There's another charity which supports the settlement itself. And there are scores of charities in this country which are devoted to illegal settlements, to war crimes, to supporting
war crimes. Yeah.
And they have... they're allowed by the Charity Commission to be charities because they say that they have public benefit. It's not a public benefit to commit war crimes in occupied territory occupied by the State of Israel. Mm. And so there's a real issue here, is that there's no pushback against this in this country. And these are organisations which should be dismantled. The people who are involved in them should potentially be considered for... being accessories to war crimes, yet they walk around our streets without any pushback.
Indeed. Well, I mean, that's certainly something that we need to take up beyond this show for sure. But we're just going to have to leave it there, if we can, because we've got another report now coming up to look at how Zionist lobby groups are censoring and distorting Palestinian history.
After eliminating the Palestinians from Palestine in the Nakba, the apartheid entity is acting through proxies in the UK and US to erase traces of the Nakba and the Palestinians' heroic freedom struggle from the pages of school textbooks. In Britain, they've used proxy groups, the Board of Deputies, which has a, quote, close working relationship with the Israeli embassy, and UK Lawyers for Israel, which works with the Israeli Foreign Ministry to edit textbooks. In a report on their efforts by the British Middle East specialist, it was found that the lobby groups carried out hundreds of changes, an average of three per page. In the first version of the textbook, Jewish terrorism was mentioned 10 times and Palestinian terrorism 32 times. Following the lobby intervention, there were only 4 references to Jewish terrorism and 61 to Palestinian terrorism. The report found the edits were not simply more pro-Israel than their original versions, but dangerously misleading. Henry Maitlis, Emeritus Professor of Education at the University of the West of Scotland, stated that the books are now in danger of being seen as propaganda. The team of pro-Israel propagandists that worked on the edits was the Board of Deputies International Relations Officer, who identifies herself as Israeli, Talia Ingleby, and Suzanne Storing, Richard Millett, Jonathan Turner, and Caroline Turner of the UK Lawyers for Israel. In the US, the situation is markedly worse, with an actual Israel lobby group parading as a benign educational body. The Institute for Curriculum Services claims to have influenced the US education system in 50 states and impacted the studies of 11 million students. It's also hosted workshops in 90 US cities with over 6,000 teachers participating. The changes ICS has requested include replacing the word settlers with communities, deleting the word Palestine and replacing it with Judah, changing the phrase Jews settled there to Jews joined those Jews already there. It even suggested removing an exercise to write an unbiased essay on the issue of West Bank settlements. It has also requested the deletion of references to Palestinian cultural heritage and tried to change school maps to include illegally occupied lands as part of Israel. The ICS is a project of the Jewish Community Relations Councils, a charity it uses to protect itself. It also receives money from the Schusterman Family Foundation, which also supports a project of the notorious Israel lobby group AIPAC. We can reveal that the deputy director of the Institute for Curriculum Services, Bella Ben-Sack, formerly worked for the Israeli Ministry of Tourism. Also, Rick Brody, a former analyst at ICS, was previously employed at Birthright, the Israeli operation to encourage Jewish children to become colonists. So here we have proxies of the Zionist regime working to mislead children in Britain and what they learn about the ongoing Nakba.
David, there seems to be a concerted effort by the Zionist lobby to rewrite history, doesn't there?
Well, there is. I mean, Gara was talking about this earlier and saying it's been in operation since 1948 at least. But I think the thing to recognise here is that they still need to do this. They haven't succeeded in doing it. They have been successful in many ways, but they haven't succeeded in erasing the alternative narrative, which is the truth about what happened in Palestine, the occupation.
I mean, Agada, I know that you've pushed back against these Zionist falsifications, haven't you? I wonder if you could maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I really hope David is right, that we are still, our version is still pushing through, because my anxiety is this campaign to erase Palestine from history and from the map is pretty sophisticated, and it's run by totally dedicated zealots who will stop at nothing, it seems, to demolish every idea that that Palestinians ever existed or they had any kind of culture, etc., etc. So it really worries me, this. It's utterly pernicious, and it's a very you can see why the Zionists have opted for that. Because if you can distort the story from the beginning and you influence school children, then they grow up with this pro-Israel bias and ignoring the Palestinians. So we made a group as part of BRICUP, which is this British Committee for the Universities of Palestine. We tried to and we took on some key textbooks for children on the Middle East. I can report a success in that endeavor because the publisher, Pearson, was so flustered by our counterattack, the way we demonstrated by studying the texts that had been altered by the Zionists. We were able to point out to them the kind of falsifications that had entered into it. They've actually withdrawn their textbooks. Mm. So that was really a little success.
Yeah,
but it's ongoing. They've got the European Union now trying to alter, to forbid certain textbooks from being taught. I think in the same sense as David is saying, we're still around, that they always have to think of how to damage us in the next step. The trouble is they're still around.
Yes.
From my point of view, they're still around.
Well, David, tell us about this US-based group that's attempting to distort history.
Well, it's more sophisticated than some others. And so, I mean, Hank Gard is right that there is a sophistication here in that it's part of a charity. So it pretends to be a charitable foundation only interested in educational matters. And it uses that charity to defend itself. It's a kind of shield against criticism and against the idea that it's actually an Israel lobby group, which, of course, it is. So that's a kind of more sophisticated strategy than they've been using, for example, in the UK, where they've put in lobby groups like the Board of Deputies or the UK Lawyers for Israel, which is a really extreme far-right pro-Israel lobby group. And that exposes them quite a lot. So it's been more successful, but it's now being exposed, and there's some pushback against it. And it's good to see that. We see the pushback, I think, in part because the resistance remains in Palestine. And that's the lodestar of these kind of debates. I mean, we see these things happening in the UK and the US, but if it wasn't for the resistance in Palestine, these would be much less successful, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the thing to watch. When the resistance is successful in Palestine, then we will see the debates in the UK and the US and Canada and elsewhere will be one toot sweet.
I mean, Garda, the attempt to distort history, the propagandising is kind of, it's nothing new. I wonder whether you could say, I mean, what do you think that says about the current situation? And indeed, what more could people do perhaps to resist and to push back against these distortions, these propagandising, which we see the Zionist lobby indulging in, which they seem to get quite a lot of support, from the corporate media, don't they?
They do. But the first step in all this is to understand and appreciate the size of the assault on the Palestinians. I think a number of activists and supporters tend to underestimate the skills and the malevolence of the other side. It has to be understood that in order to defend and support this Zionist apartheid state that is called Israel, in order to keep it going, it has an army of warriors and soldiers everywhere, supporting it, defending it, etc. So that's, you understand the size of the enemy. Now, having done that, we must be not only vigilant but constant in our efforts to counter it and to be actually even proactive. Mm-hmm. One of the problems that I have had with the solidarity movements for Palestine and the Palestinians themselves is that they are reactive. They need to be much more proactive. Yeah. They have to look at the chinks in the armor of Israel and try and exploit and get in through those chinks, so that we're doing a proper fight back, not just the defense.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, both of you, because unfortunately we've run out of time. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week with more news and analysis on Palestine Declassified. So until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. In the limelight.
The assassination of Shirin Abu Aghele places an onerous responsibility on the shoulders of journalists armed with their microphones and cameras to not flinch in the face of brutal suppression, says Iqbal Jassat, writer, in an article published under the heading Shirin Abu Aghele Personified Truth to Power. Stay tuned for more. since the brutal killing of one of Palestine's most iconic journalists, an unmistakable sense of anger has surfaced across newsrooms in the Arab world and in many parts of the world, including South Africa. Shirin Abu Aghele had been on assignment covering the settler colonial regime's military assault on Jenin within the occupied Palestinian territory when she was assassinated in cold blood. From eyewitness accounts by her colleagues who were on the beat with her, it is clear that Shirin was specifically targeted. Her death was neither accidental nor the result of a firefight between Palestinian resistance and the occupying regime. She died due to premeditated plan by the Bennett regime to assassinate her. Shirin Abu Aghele's profession required impeccable, accurate, and honest reporting, which she discharged with great integrity. Her courage and determination to bring into the living rooms of millions of people in the Arabian Peninsula and beyond the unspeakable horrors flowing from the Zionist regime's illegal occupation stood as a bulwark against the Zionist regime's goal to avoid public scrutiny. Her on-the-spot coverage of daily violations by the apartheid regime, including detentions, home demolitions, military raids, and killings of Palestinians, placed her in the crosshairs of the Zionist regime's terrorist army. Born and raised in Al-Quds, Shirin Abu Aghele knew every nook and corner of occupied Palestine as well as 1948 Palestine. Her grasp of the territories, including her vast knowledge of the history associated with the Nakba, made her an invaluable part of Al Jazeera's team. Resourceful and professional to the core, Abu Aghele's iconic status was unrivaled. Tributes that have poured in and continue to abound via social media and mainstream platforms acknowledge her profound humanity. In honoring her legacy, media houses and the entire fraternity who are serious about journalism will need to discard the fear of being smeared as anti-Semites by courageously reporting the reality of the fabricated regime of Israel's brutality. The shock and horror of the Zionist regime's savage attack on the funeral procession in full view of a global audience cannot be reduced to clashes, as some media reports suggest. To describe a full frontal violent assault by armed Israeli regime troops on mourners carrying Shirin Abu Aghele's casket to her final resting place as clashes is not only deceptive, but an insult to her memory. It needs to be called out as a blatant violation of her right to a dignified and peaceful funeral. The assassination of Shirin Abu Aghele places an onerous responsibility on the shoulders of journalists armed with their microphones and cameras to not flinch in the face of brutal suppression. Her untimely death has allowed the world to witness a colonial settler regime that to date has escaped consequences for its gross violations and abuses of fundamental human rights. Unless this changes, expect the Zionist regime's illegal occupation and war crimes to continue unabated. The agency of change possessed by media activists must thus be fully utilized. It cannot and dare not be a passing phase which is obliterated and forgotten once the cameras move on. We owe it to her and thousands of journalists across the world to ensure that their unique role in highlighting injustice, oppression, and abuse of power remains as a testament of commitment to truth and integrity. As a journalist at Al Jazeera for more than two decades, Shireen had become a household name among millions who loved, respected, and deeply revered her professionalism. South Africa has been no exception. In a fitting tribute, Palestinians as a collective mourn her loss by reminding us about the special place Shireen Abu Aghle had in their lives since 1997, bringing to their homes the horrors of the occupation and the courage of those resisting it. Her reports debunked, indeed ridiculed, the official Israeli regime narrative about the daily human rights abuses in the West Bank and inside the occupied territories. No wonder she was targeted while doing what she always did, speaking truth to power. Her reports will be an essential part of the archives of Palestine in general and that of the occupation in particular. This they will not be able to kill or erase.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Very warm welcome to the program Islamic Upbringing. This is your host Zainab. I hope wherever you are, you're fine, you're doing well. And in case you have any problems, you're not doing well. In this holy land, we always pray for your well-being, inshallah. Thank you so much for listening. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we come up with the issues, the problems, the questions that parents have about the upbringing of their children. Well, the answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. We have in studio with us our guest speaker, Sister Salma Khalafan. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
It's my pleasure.
Well, Sister Salma Khalfan, we have a very interesting question today, and I'll start our session with a direct question. We have a parent who asks a question on behalf of his teenager, a 16-year-old, asking, how can you curb the unwishful thoughts and desires that come into your mind while you're living in a Western society where you're exposed to women in provocative clothing?
Yeah, that's a very challenging question also. But of course, as Islam provides all the answers for us in all levels of tarbiyat and all ages of life.
True.
So unfortunately, in our society, youth are constantly bombarded by immorality and corruption. Everywhere you go and see, you know, billboards, photos, advertisements, even simple programs will kind of provoke a youth if he watches.
Your phone, your internet.
Exactly.
Like this is something that's very accessible to you all the time.
That's right. So it becomes very difficult for those who want to maintain an ethical religious standard of life to keep up with these values of what? Modesty.
Yeah.
Right? So, of course, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the great, he guides whom he wills. But, you know, here his mashiyat, that is his will, is a wise plan. It doesn't mean that so and so I will out of my own desire. No, whatever Allah wills. No, it's because he sees the wisdom behind it. How? That person himself should will it.
All right.
Because of that free will that he has from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah.
So when another person has to think about changing himself, then Allah will guide that person.
You are reminding me of a quote I used to see in my school time on the board always, that was written in the bold letters. It was, God helps those who help themselves.
Ahsan, yes. Also in the Quran, we have some ayats that is just now not, you know, I can't remember them, but they are many ayats to say that Allah
that
helps only
to this, so, same
those
thing.
Who help themselves. So Allah guides whomever he wills out of his wisdom, of course. So we have to put our trust in him and never despair of his mercy. You know, this youth probably has seen these kind of challenges.
Yeah.
The parent has, you know, put this question forward that my teen has confided in me. And that's a very big thing. If a teen confides to his parents, he trusts his parents. There's a communication, you know, like a relationship of communication between the two, which is a very commendable thing, I feel. So he says he's put this in front of me by saying that this is a great challenge for me. When I'm seeing immodesty in front of me, I'm getting like, you know, I'm falling into sin, right? Yeah. I'm looking at the women and I'm probably committing sins in the process. So Allah says, never despair of my mercy, first of all, okay? And then you think of a plan. Because if you despair of Allah's mercy, you won't go forward. Because this is the thing that shaitan attacks you first with, hopelessness.
Right.
When the hopelessness sets in, he knows that you'll become a passive person. But when the hope comes, then you'll see now that initiative will come. What do I do about it, right?
Yeah.
So, no despair and mercy in Islam. So,
That's why we have every chapter opening with Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim.
Exactly. Ahsant. So there is a program we can advise this parent to talk to, since the youth has talked to his parent himself, we can advise the youth, the father, to set up a program for him. You know, at these times they're so vulnerable that they don't know what to do. So you set them up a program.
All right.
That this is what you should do. Number one, number two, number three during the day.
All right.
And that's it really proves very fruitful in the end.
Okay? Yeah.
First of all, keep oneself busy with a specific devotional program of the day.
All right.
What is the specific devotional program? For example, prayers 5 times a day, even some mustahabat, maybe going to visit somebody,
going to the recommendations.
A friend, or going to the mosque to pray, meeting good people of the mosque, listening to their du'as and Quran. Make sure that you'd advise...
Visiting the sick people in the hospital.
That might be not possible every day.
Yeah.
But keeping this devotional program in such a way that he's able to remain alert and to even account for his deeds at the end.
All right.
And alertness is a very, it's called muraqibah. The muraqibah bit should be advised that if you want improve your spirituality
careful.
By these devotional acts of muraqibah, being alert.
Being alert and
you know,
and
Allah
careful.
Is looking at you. Alam ya'lam bi anna Allah yara. So when you are alert, you will know that these things are forbidden for me. And the more you pray, the more you become godly, the less you become sinful. It's automatic.
All right.
You know, where Allah is there in the heart, shaitan flees.
All right. So you have to actually make a strong connection with Allah, one or the other way, to stay away from this issue.
The sins, exactly. So, and to remain busy, you know, in life. For example, if a person is idle, the idle thoughts is the devil's workshop.
Yeah.
The devil will come in all kind of ways. For example, if he sees this kind of, immodesty in the streets, he'll look for it in the internet as well. He'll say that I want to see more of it.
The curiosity grows.
Yes, exactly. So, and a youth, of course, has everything ready for, you know, like...
Accessible.
Yes, exactly. And falling into this pit.
Yeah.
Because of his desires at its peak, right?
Yeah.
So he wants to do something to let out his desires, but of course, out of Sharia, which is haram. So when he practices this kind of specific devotional program, it'll be very less likely. Another specific devotional program is fasting.
All right.
Very hard, but encourage the youth. Like the father could encourage him that if you fast once a week, maybe I could give you a, for example, maybe gift him with some money or something.
You
like
have
that,
to you encourage know. Your child.
Yeah.
And fasting is something that teaches us to get rid of our nafs, of our
lowly desires.
Self, of our desires, because a person is captured by his desires. So in order to get rid of that, we need to, we need to fast, and fasting teaches us a lot. I will be talking to you here. We need to take a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to the IRIB English Radio, and we are talking about Islamic upbringing, a very important issue, how to stay safe from the unwishful thoughts. We have Sister Khalafan with us, and Sister, you were telling us some of the very beautiful devotional ways how to attach ourselves. You said we should go for fasting.
Yes, but sometimes it's very difficult for a youth to fast because maybe he goes to school and he gets tired and he does sports and everything like that. So maybe you could tell him that, you know, to prevent yourself from shaitanic thoughts, first of all, lower your gaze.
Oh.
Yeah. Lowering your gaze is, people would look at it as strange, but it would really attract.
All right.
There would be a lot of light from him, and people would share that. People would try to love him also because of that. He's doing it for what? For the sake of Allah, right? So as soon as this appears near him, he should look down, however much it's hard for him. Because this is the easy way out, right?
Yeah.
If he doesn't look, he won't be exposed to that kind of, you know, illicitness or immodesty. So he would yearn for it, right? So he has to do that. And another thing is that he can recite zikr also. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-ali al-azim. Whenever, you know, this zikr actually takes away the shaitanic thoughts. Actually said, ulama have said, big scholars, great scholars have mentioned that if you want to take away bad thoughts from your mind, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-ali al-azim is the best zikr.
All right.
So could teach him that this should be part of your devotional program during the day.
All right.
From the prayers and, if you can, the fast. Such azkar. And lowering your gaze.
All right.
And then not talking to everyone. You know?
It's not necessary to talk to every third person.
It's not necessary to talk to even like a person in the West, a boy. Does he really need to talk to the girls in his class?
Not needed all the time.
Not needed at all. He may talk to boys because their boys and girls are mixed together, right?
Yeah.
For example, in the high school
that
they go to. So they can easily do that. Not looking at the billboards. Lowering the gaze, not looking down that you can fall or something like that, lowering your gaze.
And I think especially this lowering the gaze kind of thing that we also have in Quran when it's the verse of hijab comes in. I think it actually starts with the males first. Lowering your gaze. I think lowering your gaze is the hijab for
tell the believer,
men and women to... Like, first it tells for men to lower their gaze, and I think not all the time a person should be lowering the gaze, but once he gets feeling that way, like he's seeing those unwishful
thoughts.
He gets distracted, actually. So he has to lower his gaze. He has to actually avoid in one or the other way. So, sister, I'll be talking to you here. We need to take a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said,
ya muqiyal khayrat.
the best among you is he who learns the Quran and teaches it.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is the program Islamic Upbringing, and we are talking about very important issue, how to stay safe from unwishful thoughts. So, sister, you told us beautiful ways, you told us beautiful things, you told us the devotional programs and a list of things one can do, from fasting to lowering gaze, and other things. I would want you to continue if we have something else pending in the session.
It's very necessary. Exercise program. The youth should be encouraged to play, so much so that at the end of the day he gets so tired that he falls asleep naturally.
All right.
Rather than having those thoughts all together, you know, filtering.
Yeah.
That what did I see today? Oh, this kind of thing was so attractive for me. And then he keeps on and shaitan lures him to fall into sin and things like that. So that stage should not come about in the first place. Curb it, root it, uproot it before they fall in the pit.
Yeah.
So just as it starts, it should be uprooted. Otherwise, if it lingers and then you uproot it, it's very hard.
All right.
It's spoiled your kind of your heart, the state of your heart. It's made you feel like desirous. It's caused you to go step by step to the shaitanic plans, you see.
Yeah.
But if you uproot it directly, and one way to prevent these thoughts from coming in itself in the first place is to be active, exercise, give a program, sports program for the child.
Yeah.
Either whatever he likes, swimming, like tennis, whatever he likes, let him be so, like go to the gym, like work out in the gym for 2 hours. If the father accompanies him, it becomes all the more special for the boy. So both of them can work out in the gym. And then when they come, they're so tired.
Yeah, so and that they fall asleep naturally.
Yes, yes, exactly. And then another thing is that the type of food you give to this boy. Is it junk food? Is it meat kind of food? Meat increases the desires, the shahwa.
All right.
Yes, so what should the... Always plan the meal, the diet in such a way that...
you give proteins, but you manage
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Give the diet in such a the way that it's all balanced.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, sister, for being with us. Thank you so much for giving us such beautiful ways. You always come up with such beautiful discussions. And you reminded me today of my father, who gave me in my teens a small diary and told me, while you sleep, make an account of yourself, make two columns, a good things I did in the day, the bad things, and ask for forgiveness for the bad things, and promise yourself you'll never do that again. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. To listen to that session again, you can go back to our website, parstoday.com, go to Call of Islam, email us your questions as well at the email englishradio@irib.ir. And in case you want to follow us on the social media platforms, you can just search Call of Islam Radio and you can find programs there. Thank you so much for listening. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.